Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Today's show is brought to you by Show Dog Prep School. Online courses, webinars, and mentor programs on demand at showdogprepschool.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I'm joined again today by our favorite veterinary voice, Dr. Marty Greer. Welcome, Marty.
I'm really happy to be here today. Thanks.
I think we have a pretty major topic to discuss, and I am very grateful that you have agreed to join us and talk about this. And you just told me this morning this situation actually now has a name, and that is nutritionally mediated DCM, which is dilated cardiomyopathy.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. This is really in the news, and it's really real,
mm-hmm.
and it's really startling that we're seeing the number of dogs affected by this as we are.
Right. I think that this is such an important topic, and I know people have kind of talked about it and they've sort of commiserated on it, and I'm really excited to get some great information. So we know that this direct correlation between feeding a grain-free diet and dilated cardiomyopathy in golden retrievers specifically was first published or researched by the University of California at Davis. Is that correct?
That's what I understand, yes. And, you know, I want to preface my remarks by saying I'm a practitioner. I'm not a nutritionist, but I've been following all the information that's being circulated, both on the scientific side from the University of California, Davis, at their veterinary school, and also from the anecdotal pieces of information that people are contributing through Facebook, through the FDA, and through other methods.
Right. And you are seeing patients. You are treating clients that have this specific problem.
Yes. We've had two of them in our practice, and certainly we are just a small animal veterinary clinic in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
I had the cardiologist here yesterday from the University of Wisconsin, and they are also diagnosing and treating multiple patients with this condition. So this is the real thing. This is not something that people are just sort of imagining. This isn't fake news.
Right.
This is really clinically an important disorder that we're seeing pretty suddenly in dogs.
Right. And so let's break this down. Now, I know also, I didn't know the date, but I knew that the FDA has actually come out, like the government agency has come out and said, yes, this is real, people. And that was,
yes.
You thought this summer, right? July time?
Right. July 12th, they published their first statement about the link or the apparent link between taurine deficient diets. And it may turn out to be something in addition to taurine. L-carnitine may play a role in this as well. But at this point, we know that there's a surge in the number of cases of dilated cardiomyopathy in breeds that are both genetically predisposed and dogs that are not genetically predisposed to have this condition. So there's been a surge in those cases. University of Wisconsin went back and looked at their data, and they said, yes, since May, we've seen an uptick. UC Davis has been really instrumental in this. And remember that in 1987, Paul Pion, when he was at the UC Davis Veterinary School, was the person who developed the theory and then later proven to be an accurate theory that there's a link between taurine deficiencies in cats and dilated cardiomyopathy. So this isn't new. This isn't imaginary. Since the 1970s, we've known that cats needed taurine in their diet at a higher level than dogs to maintain their retinal function.
Right.
And in the summer of 1987, Paul Pion, who's now the director and really significant player in the veterinary field by the relationship he has with Veterinary Information Network, he's really been a thought leader in veterinary medicine for decades. But, you know, this was all put together by him in the 80s with cats when they realized that there was a link not just to taurine deficiency causing blindness, but taurine deficiency also causing dilated cardiomyopathy in cats. And since that time, the pet food companies have addressed it by adding increased taurine to the cat food, and we just never see a cat with dilated cardiomyopathy anymore. We can still see hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which is a different form of the condition in the heart, but we never see DCM anymore in cats, which is a godsend because it was a death sentence to these cats. And when you go back and look through the literature, it says tens of thousands of cats are dying every year from DCM. So So it's clear that there's a link with taurine and cardiomyopathy in the cat. It's not a big stretch to imagine that it could also have the same link in dogs. And my fear is that we're going to see tens of thousands of dogs going down the same path if we don't get our clients to understand the significance of this link and get their nutrition patterns changed.
Right. And it has only been in the last, 5 years that the concept of grain-free foods has been marketed so successfully by dog food manufacturers that it would make sense that now we're starting to see problems arise from that particular method of feeding.
Right. And we're probably seeing somewhere between 25 and 30% of our client feeding either a raw meat diet or a grain-free diet. And it's been linked with grain-free and raw. So we need to be clear that the raw meat diets contain no carbohydrates if they're purely meat diets. The grain-free diets are containing lentils, peas, garbanzo beans, white potatoes, and sweet potatoes. So because I think that there's a big surge in the number of people that are feeding this and the length of time is now long enough that we're seeing depletion of taurine, we've seen some puppies that have been fed grain-free diets since they were born. We had a Great Dane in our practice that died about 3 weeks ago. She was not even yet 2 years old. And I'm not going to mention the specific name of the diet, but it was one of the diets that have been implicated on the Facebook page. If you go in and look at the chart that's on there, their chart is considered to be confidential, so you're not allowed to share the specifics of it. I'm not going to cross that line. But if anybody wants to join the Dilated Cardiomyopathy Facebook group, they can have access to that. If they go to that, are approved as a member, and then go to the files section, that chart is available to people so they can go in and look at specific diets by manufacturer and the specific diet that's involved. So, yes, this is recent, this is new, but it takes a while for those taurine deficiencies to develop. And it also takes somewhere between probably 3 and 12 months for those taurine deficiencies to be corrected by a change in the diet. So this isn't something that's just going to go away in a couple of days on a new diet. It's really important people recognize that.
Okay, and so a second follow-up question. We're going to keep going on this, but I want to go back to one thing. On the actual taurine deficiency, I have, like you, read a lot, seen a lot, anecdotally, people discussing this topic. And one comment, somebody said, oh, I'll just give them extra taurine. How does taurine supplementation actually impact the situation?
Honestly, we don't know. The question is, are the diets taurine deficient, or is there something in the peas, lentils, garbanzo beans, potatoes, and sweet potatoes that is somehow chelating the taurine or otherwise making it metabolically inefficient in the dog's body? So right now, just throwing taurine at the dog may not be a solution. Our recommendation in our practice and that I've seen most veterinarians making is that if you don't have a dog that has to be on a grain-free diet because of a prescription from a veterinarian, you need to get the dog on a diet that contains alternative carbohydrate sources, the more traditional carbohydrate sources that we've seen in dog food. And remember, since the 1940s, Purina, Iams, Royal Canin, Hill's, these companies have been making dog food for decades. And they've been doing it very successfully with corn, which seems to change the metabolism not only of potentially taurine, but methionine, cysteine, some other things. But corn, wheat, barley, rice, oatmeal, there's a lot of really good grains out there. And I don't know very many dogs that cannot tolerate at least one of those. Yes, there is a subset of dogs that are ultra sensitive to some of those diets. But I'll tell you honestly, I'd rather deal with a dog with an ear infection or deal with a dog that has some looser stools than to deal with a dog that's got a cardiomyopathy, because we can fix diarrhea and we can fix ear infections, but we can't fix these heart problems fast enough to turn these dogs around. They're coming into the veterinary clinic with clinical signs of collapse, weakness, irregular heartbeats, and they're dying in literally a matter of days when it's going to take us 3 to 12 months to correct these nutritional deficiencies.
Wow.
We're not going to be able to turn the ship around fast enough for some of these dogs. And it breaks my heart to think that people are honestly thinking they're feeding the very best food that they could. They're spending a lot of money on it. They're following what they've been told in advertising and in the media to believe that a grain-free diet is the best, the healthiest, the most superior diet for their dog, only to find out. And these people are angry, and I don't blame them for being angry. But they're really upset that what they've been told and what they've been spending money on is perhaps not the best food for their dog. And we have a tiny percentage of dogs in our practice that cannot tolerate some of these foods. So if you're not prescribed this medication or this prescription diet, I really think you need to get changed as quickly as you can And if you have any questions about it, if your dog's on a prescription diet or you have questions that you want a nutritional consult, speak to your veterinary clinic, speak to your veterinarian or your veterinary technicians who are trained in nutrition, despite what you're told in the media. We are trained in nutrition.
Right. And I think that for many of us, longtime dog owners, you know, I personally avoid corn, wheat, and soy. I have found that if I can keep those three products out of my dog's food, they do very, very well. And as you say, rice, oatmeal, lots of options there. Barley, I've had great success with barley.
Right, right. And we just can't afford to have this kind of thing happening.
Mm-hmm.
And there are comments when I've put posts up on Facebook, there are people who are saying, oh, you veterinarians, you're profiting from this.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I'm not. I haven't sold a single bag of dog food to a
right.
client in my practice that has anything to do with being a change for them. I'm sending them to the marketplace where we know that there are great foods out there. Unless the dog needs to be on a prescription diet, I don't see any reason that people can't just go to the store and find a good basic food. And if you look at the charts, if you follow the information, really the diets that are being recommended, again, are Royal Canin, which is also making Iams.
Mm-hmm.
Iams was taken over by them. Purina and Hill Science Diet. These people have been doing research, and this is where the research comes from. The other companies who are more recently coming to market are not doing research, and many of them are not doing clinical feeding trials of their foods to prove that there is safety in the food that they're feeding.
Right.
There's two ways to have dog food approved, cat food approved. One is AFCO standards, which is a chemical testing, basically, of the food. The other is clinical feeding trials. And unfortunately, many of the food companies are not doing clinical trials. And I did send to you a link that I'm sure you're going to be able to put up.
Yes.
That is the World Small Animal Veterinary Association's, their nutrition committee recommendations on selecting pet foods, which goes through a list of questions that you can call the pet food companies and specifically ask. So I'm not going to read through this document because
I will make sure it's posted, yeah.
Right. People can certainly read it themselves. But most pet food bags of food or their websites have a phone number that you can call. And I would encourage people to do so, to pick up the phone and call these pet food companies and speak to them directly about what is in their food. And even if it's got additional taurine in it, we just don't know yet if that's going to be enough. Like I said, it may just be that it's metabolically inactivated somehow. So we need to make sure that our dogs are on appropriate carbohydrate sources. So I can't emphasize this enough that
right.
I don't think you should finish feeding the bag of food that you're on. I think you need to make a very rapid transition to something that is nutritionally more suited for the dog that your dog or dogs you're feeding, and get them changed as quickly as you can.
I hope our listeners are hearing this. This is real, and you really need to pay attention. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. All right, crew. Last month, I was filling you in on the Trupanion Breeder Support Program. And in case you missed it, this is a free program for breeders that lets us offer our buyers, our puppy buyers, a go-home day offer so that they can try out Trupanion and everybody has the peace of mind that that puppy is covered in case of any kind of an incident. But I was talking to Haran recently, and I didn't realize at the time that they actually have a breeding rider that is additional to the regular healthcare coverage that Trupanion offers our dogs. And so I wanted to bring Haran Greer from Trupanion back to tell us about it, because I was blown away. So welcome, Haran.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for having me back. And I'm happy this came up in conversation.
Yeah, right? So tell us about it. This is pretty incredible to me.
Yeah, so I'll just start at the basics. You know, so if you join Trupanion, we just have one simple plan. It's 90% coverage for the unexpected illnesses, accidents, and injuries. And then from there, breeders can add a breeding rider coverage to make sure that they're protected from the unexpected things that can happen with breeding.
Okay, so what does that cover? What kind of things are you covering in your claims with the breeding rider?
So it's truly things that are unexpected. So anything that you can't plan for in advance is what Trupanion gives you peace of mind from, right? But with the breeding rider, you know, the most common claim that we see are for C-sections.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was looking through, I was curious just to see what kind of claims we have been seeing in the past year. I was surprised that pyometra payouts have exceeded what we've paid out for C-section.
Wow.
So the claims paid ranged from the lowest one that we paid out was $1,740, and the highest one to date this year has been $5,500.
That's pretty incredible. So how much does a person pay to add that breeding rider to their regular insurance coverage?
So that rider has variables. You'll want to give us a call or go to our website. The factors are things like where you live, what breed you have, is it a male or female, how old are they, and then the deductible. And those right. deductible options is where, you know, the flexibility comes in mm-hmm. for your monthly payment. And those range from $0 to $1,000.
Okay, beautiful. So check it out, listeners, puredogtalk.com. You can find the Trupanion website. Just click that logo and it will take you in to get lots and lots of information about some stuff that I think not all of us always think about. So thank you, Haran. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Laura. I hope to be back on soon.
So for people who don't know, moving forward now, for people who don't know, run us through some quick identifying things. If my dog has DCM, how am I going to know? What are my symptoms going to be?
Typically, it's going to be weakness. They're not going to have the same level of energy or activity. If they go up a flight of stairs, if you take them on a walk, they're weak. They may collapse. If you put your hand on their chest or put your hand over an artery, you can feel perhaps a rapid or an irregular heartbeat. So it's going to be some symptoms, maybe even coughing if there's fluid mm-hmm. building up in their lungs from the DCM. Mm-hmm. So an echocardiogram is the ultimate diagnostic tool that we have for diagnosing dogs with this. A chest x-ray at your regular veterinary clinic will at least demonstrate if there's fluid in the lungs and an enlarged heart. And the recommendation right now made by the cardiologist that was here yesterday was that any dog that's on a grain-free diet, go in and get a blood test for taurine as soon as possible, get it sent to UC Davis for testing, and assess what level of taurine that particular dog has in their circulating blood. So there's two different kinds of taurine tests. The one that's easiest, the one that's most reliable to run is on whole blood. So it's not on plasma, it's not on serum, it's on a whole blood sample put into a green top or a heparinized tube, sent to UC Davis, and tested. It is taking about 2 weeks to get results back, so mm-hmm. you're not going to get it immediately. They're running them once a week. At least that was the last report I had. They may have changed that protocol based on the volume of tests.
Right.
But if you have any question, any veterinary clinic can draw the blood, put the blood in a green top tube. If your veterinary clinic doesn't want to ship it for you, there are instructions on how to ship it to UC Davis, how the sample should be handled so that it's appropriately shipped to their laboratory, and that sample then can be run. But in the interim, change the diet. If your dog's been on something grain-free and you have any question about it at all, the recommendation is to start taurine and perhaps taurine and L-carnitine. And the testing and the publications that have been done coming out of Tufts demonstrate that the GNC product, not the capsule but the tablet, is one that has the best bioavailability from what we know today. Now, that may change next week. There may be other companies that come along and can document that they have equally good bioavailability, but those are the recommendations. So as quickly as you can, you need to get these things turned around for your dogs. This is life-threatening, and this is serious. And, you know, there may be a subset of dogs that are predisposed to this. They may have some genetic predisposition, like the Newfoundland, like the Golden Retriever,
mm-hmm.
like the Cocker Spaniel. And we also see DCM in higher incidences in Boxers, Dobermans, Great Danes.
Right.
You know, there's certainly some breeds that are predisposed. But this is being seen in breeds that we've just never seen DCM in before. Yesterday, I had a dog here that did have a taurine level done on her. She was 142, which is below what's considered to be safe. The echocardiogram did show that there's some early heart changes, so it is really significant that people are getting taurine levels done. It's not that difficult. It runs, depending on how the veterinary clinic structures their fees, it'll be somewhere between $100 and $200 to get the test. But when you're paying $80 for a bag of food,
mm-hmm.
and you can go out and buy a bag of food that's perfectly appropriate for the dog that's now a $30 bag of food, it's not going to take you very long to realize that A, it's safer for the dog, and B, in the long run, you're probably not going to spend more money.
Right. Well, and I think, too, I agree with you. It's so frustrating, our struggle as pet owners. You know, you got one side over here saying, oh, it's horrible, and they had recalls, and there's gross stuff in there, and I can't feed that horrible food. And then something like this comes along and blindsides you, and you just kind of feel whipped, right?
Yeah, and the comment I've had from every single client when I've talked to them, and every client that's come to our hospital has gotten a handout, every client has had a conversation about what food are you feeding. I've been pulling up website after website, looking at ingredient lists with clients so that in the exam room we're having this conversation, and they all look at me and they all say the same thing, and that's like, but doctor, I thought I was feeding the best food out
right.
there for my pet.
Right.
I was going to the trouble of going to a specialty store. I was spending the extra money. I was having it drop shipped from someplace.
Mm.
I've spent a lot of money on this. I've done a lot of research on it. And we have absolutely no research that says that a lentil-based diet is any better for dogs unless they are highly allergic. And we have a lot of good information from FDA, from UC Davis, from other sources, that feeding a diet that's deficient in taurine related to the lentil, garbanzo bean, pea, potato, and sweet potato diets are really putting our dogs at risk. The other thing that you have to realize when you're looking at pet food labels, and believe me, I've looked at hundreds of them in the last several weeks, is when you look at the label, it may have a meat source or two meat sources listed first, and they always have to list the sources of food in the order in which they are the heaviest. So they may have a wet source of meat, and then they may list pea, pea fiber, and pea protein as three separate entities in the diet or something similar to that. And if you add those up and you figure out on a dry matter basis, those are probably far exceeding the protein source that you're getting in the diet. So there's really, really a lot of pea, lentil, potato, and sweet potato in these diets. And those are not expensive sources of food, but they are being charged premium prices when clients are buying food for their pets. So to me, it's counterintuitive, and no wonder people are upset and confused.
Right.
And I understand that completely. But if they want to start doing some research, there's great information out there. And they shouldn't be angry. They just need to put that behind them, get over the philosophical thing about, I think it's better for my dog to eat a gluten-free diet, and to move on and say, I need to put my dog back on these more traditional carbohydrate sources that for 70 years we've known are safe, and let's go back to that foundation and get them back turned around and on something that's more nutritionally appropriate.
Right. And I think segue, philosophical, I think that's where we are, you know, today's society. And the anthropomorphism of our pets and all of this, if gluten-free is good for me, it must be good for my dog too. And I would encourage folks to listen to what you're saying, which is that people and dogs aren't the same.
No, they're not. And I'm very lucky that I can eat and drink gluten. I love my bread and my pasta. I'm crazy about my beer. I'm very happy to have those things in my life. So I personally don't philosophically have a commitment to gluten-free in my lifestyle, but I know a lot of clients do. And they may also have vegan or vegetarian commitments. And we have to recognize that what's been proven to be nutritionally appropriate for our pets is not the same as what's right for us. They don't have cardiac disease that we do. They have a different kind. This is dilated cardiomyopathy. This isn't coronary artery disease.
Right.
And we have to just realize that we have to go back and get to the foundation of what we've known for 70 years has been healthy feeding pets. And these pet food companies are not in the business of causing harm to people or their pets, but inadvertently, that's really where this is heading. Is it just a disconnect in what's appropriate for these dogs to be eating? And remember, it is a dog thing. Then in the 1970s, it was figured out it was a cat thing.
Right.
And now the same thing is catching up with us in dogs.
Right.
So there are some supplements that you can get that contain taurine and L-carnitine. But right now, like I said, the taurine is what we're really focusing on. We don't know what role L-carnitine is going to play, but I wouldn't be surprised, but what there's a role in that as well.
Interesting, because like every other dog owner in the world, I've read dog food labels for years, and I've always seen L-carnitine and said, what does that do? So it's cool information.
Yeah, it's good for hearts. It helps with weight loss. There's some reasons that metabolically it's put into food. But we just don't know how that's going to link together. But there may be an association with that as well. It's going to be interesting what the next 6 to 12 months bring in the pet food industry. We're going to see certainly an upheaval in what's going on. And no one's picking a particular brand and bashing it. The point is that we know that it's a whole category of foods, and it's made across the board by many, many companies.
Right.
And for probably 10 or 15 years, we've known that some of these protein sources can be a problem for certain dogs that are allergic, but it appears to be more protein than carbohydrate-based that's causing the allergies.
Interesting.
Yeah, you may have to look for a protein source that's similar to the protein source that you're currently feeding. So if you're into the cool proteins like duck instead of chicken, or you know, you want to stay on a salmon or a pork diet or whatever it happens to be, the protein source is probably not the problem. It really is the carbohydrate source that we're looking at.
Okay. All right. Very, very good. Well, Marty, I really, really appreciate your time. It's a Sunday afternoon, and I know you have work to do, but this is powerfully important information. So number one, get your dog off the grain-free food. Number two, if you've been on grain-free food, get the dog's taurine level tested in their blood. Number three, if you have a taurine deficiency, what's our step there?
See a cardiologist. Okay. Go directly to a cardiologist, get an echo, find out the severity of the disease, And we know from studies that are done that on average dogs live 30% longer if they're seeing a cardiologist instead of seeing a regular clinician. If you can get in, if you're close enough to a cardiologist and they have enough appointment times available, I mean, these people are going to be run ragged pretty soon.
Yeah.
But get in, see a cardiologist, get an appropriate cardiac medication for your dog if the dog has an arrhythmia or a dilated cardiomyopathy. There are very good drugs on the market, but it's going to take a long time for nutritionally your dog to get back to where they were. So don't wait, don't hesitate, and, you know, get in to see somebody as soon as you possibly can and get those blood tests started and some things turned around for your dog before it is irreparable damage that's done to their heart.
Okay. And I think my closing on this, and I expect you're going to agree with me, is this is the sort of thing you need to see a trained professional. This is not something to decide based on your favorite, I love my polka dot purple man-eating dog group on Facebook.
Yes. Yeah, I would encourage you to see a veterinarian. We all have nutritional training, different levels of it depending on the person's individual experiences, but we have nutritional training. Get in, see your veterinarian or veterinary technician, get some help, and make sure you're making good decisions going forward because it is going to be life-changing for your dog. Don't wait philosophically for your dog to end up in trouble. Get in there and get some help before something is just beyond hope.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Marty. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And now, a quick tip from our friends at American Dog Fancier. Keep your ad simple and make sure it focuses on the dog. Very often in advertising, less is more. American Dog Fancier, affordable show dog advertising. Mention Pure Dog Talk and get 10% off your first ad with American Dog Fancier. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.